when COVID hit, spring of 2020, Golfino hit on some hard times because they had so many freestanding stores. So they had over 30 freestanding stores that all of a sudden had to be closed down, and
right.
they ended up selling the brand. And when they sold the brand, it affected all of us. And it certainly affected us in America. I was getting phone calls like crazy from the country clubs, from the members. What's going on with Golfino? Can we get it? After a couple weeks of that and sitting over some dinners with my husband, it dawned on me that, you know what, if you were ever going to create a ladies premium golf brand, now is the time, because there was all of a sudden a hole in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And that hole is what I created, by the way.
Right, right.
Being able to get Golfino into all of these clubs and have the support that we did. Now, all of a sudden, there was a need for it, for something similar. So we had a market to go out to. I was fortunate that I still had the sales team that I had. I had customers who would talk to me and who trusted me. And I had connections in Europe for a design team and production team. So I had a lot of pieces to the puzzle that I had unknowingly been working on for 7 years, not knowing exactly that it would translate into Lola Sport.
Welcome to the Mod Golf Podcast, where we speak with the influencers, disruptors, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are shaping the future of golf. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're new to the Mod Golf Podcast, thanks so much for joining us, and please subscribe to the show so you hear about all of our upcoming episodes and you can enter our latest golf product giveaway. I'm your host, Colin Weston, and today my guest is Lisa O'Hurley, entrepreneur, CEO, and founder of Lola Sport. After a 10-year career at Golf Channel, Lisa began the U.S. business Golfino, turning her love for golf fashion into her profession. And after 7 years there, Lisa founded Lola Sport in June 2020 to bring premium European design fashion to the U.S. that embraces the American sporting lifestyle. So I hope I did you justice on that intro there, Lisa. So with that, Lisa, welcome to the Mod Golf Podcast, and thanks for joining us today.
That was the best introduction I've ever had.
Wow.
Thank you. Thanks, Colin.
Ah, you're
really appreciate it.
Are we done there? Did I get it all in there?
I'm gonna have to take you to dinner parties.
Jeez. Okay, well, I'm going to stop talking there, because usually with me, the more I talk, the more trouble I get into here. So I guess we're done. That's a wrap for this podcast episode. That was fantastic. So take care. No, yep. we're going to go a little deeper than that, Lisa. So where I want to start, I ask this question quite often, and just looking at your background a little bit, I think it's quite intriguing of kind of how things have collided and intersected to arrive where we are today for this conversation. So let's start with golf in the sense of playing golf and your connection to golf. So let's start with that. When did you first start playing golf, and how did you get introduced to the game?
So, Colin, I literally grew up in golf. From the time I was born, my dad was a country club general manager, and my mom was either a membership director or a merchandise coordinator, merchandise buyer at several clubs. My dad worked for Club Corps a long time. Back then, it was called CCA. We moved around a lot. He was the GM of several clubs. Most recently, he spent 20 years at Country Club of the Rockies in Vail, Colorado.
All right.
My mom, during our entire time of moving around club to club, she was always either the membership person or the merchandise buyer. So I kind of grew up in the game. I certainly knew a lot about the game, but didn't really start playing until the summer I was going into high school. We were at the time living in Sugar Land, Texas. And the high school that I was going into had the number one girls golf team in the state of Texas. And as you might know, Texas and sports go hand in hand. Very, very big deal. So I kind of thought to myself, oh, that'd be fun. So I started taking lessons. At the time, my dad had a young pro working for him in the golf shop named Billy Ray Brown, who then went on to play on the PGA Tour and is now a Golf Channel commentator, actually.
All right.
But Billy Ray gave me my first lessons, as well as my dad. I mean, my dad has always been a one handicap, and I certainly have my natural swing from him. But Billy Ray gave me my first formal lessons when I was about 13. And I went on to make that team in Texas. And then we moved to Phoenix, where I had the opportunity to go to Xavier College Prep, which had the number one girls golf team in the nation. When I was there, we won our 8th, 9th, and 10th year in a row national championships.
Wow.
I went from never playing before my freshman year down to a one handicap by the time I was a junior. So all I did pretty much was play golf. Xavier was the kind of place where studies were very important. It was a very hard school, but because you were on the golf team, you got out of school early every day and you spent the remainder of your day until sundown at Camelback Golf Club, actually, in Scottsdale, Arizona. And so that's where I was literally until I graduated. I went on to Baylor University, which is where I played on their golf team.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I kind of thought that would be sort of the end of my golf career. I had no real designs or desires to play professionally. And little did I know that the golf would actually be the segue to my entire career. It was while I was at Baylor and studying English, something completely unrelated, that I saw in the Dallas Morning News that there was a golf network that was in formation and that Arnold Palmer was part of it and that it was headquartered in Orlando, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been the kind of person to kind of go after whatever it was that I was very interested in. And I had no, obviously, zero background in television. I mean, I was in college.
Right.
My resume, I could write it on a napkin.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, I found somebody with a connection through golf, of course, to the Golf Channel, sent in my resume. I flew down to Orlando. I think I was employee number, 22, something very early. It was 3 years before they hired somebody younger than me. So I was really, really green when I was at the Golf Channel.
Wow.
They put me through some sort of like a psychological business test to see what I'd be good at.
Okay.
They said, it turns out you're good in sales. So we need you to go distribute the network. We have openings here in Orlando, or you can go open up an office in Los Angeles. So I did that. So I went from playing a lot and all of a sudden transferring that into my full career, which has been amazing, but it started all at the Golf Channel.
Got it. So I find this intriguing. So obviously you've got that golf background, that pedigree from a very young age and through your mom and your dad, and then through high school and through college. And an English degree. So I'm very curious to learn where you got this entrepreneurial yearning or even the confidence of that. Did that come from? I understand you say your favorite boss was Arnold Palmer. And one thing I love to talk about entrepreneurs like yourself is like, who do you have as mentors? Who inspires you? So tell us a little bit about your relationship with Arnold Palmer before we start getting into all the good things you're doing with Lola Sport.
Okay, so I was so fortunate, wasn't I, though, to work for a company that was headed up at the time by Arnold Palmer. Actually, he was really the chairman of our board, but was very involved. People, I think, often thought that he was just more of a name and a face, but he actually was in the office quite a lot.
Right.
And when I first started at the Golf Channel, believe it or not, I was one of the best golfers there because they had taken so much from the cable industry. Cable and production and things. And it wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't a lot of golfers.
Right.
And it was me and Arnold and our CFO at the time who were really good. So because of that, I had a little bit more of an entree to spend more time with Arnold Palmer. Whenever we would have an event or a tournament where we needed to send somebody from the Golf Channel that would play well, they sent me. And I was so lucky to have that experience. So as the years went by, as I was at the Golf Channel, I just developed a really strong friendship with Arnold, almost like a grandfather role. And it was him who instilled in me a lot of confidence because I was new to that industry. I obviously knew golf well, but I was new to everything that I was learning at the time. And he just kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. And I was able to have 3 very distinct jobs there over my 10 years, and each one was a step up. I felt supported the entire time by both he and Joe Gibbs, who was our CEO.
Wow. Sounds like a tremendous leader. I speak to so many entrepreneurs, not just in the golf industry, but also in all industries and all sectors. There seems to be these universal characteristics of people that are great leaders. And just because you're a boss doesn't mean you're a great leader. And it sounds like, for what you just mentioned there, Lisa, that Arnold Palmer is a great leader. The fact sounds like he pushed you and challenged you to stretch, but also you were there to have the support, really engaged with you there. And it sounds like that culture that he created permeates throughout everything that you do. So with that, I'm very curious to hear now how that transcends to what you do now. Let's move forward to June of 2020 with Golfino. Sounds like you got your feet wet a little bit there in the kind of the entrepreneurial game and even more in apparel to kind of understand what would work and what wouldn't and what your real passion is. So I want to ask you this. So leading up to the launch in June 2020, what did you do to create Lola Sport? Where did you see opportunities? What was the aha moment? Where did you see the market that also is very competitive already in women's sport fashion? Where did you see the opportunity? And then you then had the courage with you and the team that you put together to then take that leap and go, you know what? We're going for this to make that happen. So tell us about that, the early formation and the idea of Lola Sport.
Okay. Well, to really paint that picture, I have to go back to my time with Golfino.
Yep.
I had taken some time off after leaving the Golf Channel. I got married and had a baby and then was looking to get back into the industry. And at the time, my husband and I were playing yearly in the Dunhill Links Championship, which is hosted over in St. Andrews, Carnoustie King's Barnes in Scotland.
Right.
And it was there that I came across the Golfino store that was in the Old Course Hotel. And obviously, I had been in golf a long time. I had been in apparel because of my mom. You know, I'd been around it, certainly.
Right.
And I had never heard of Golfino, and I'd never seen anything like it. I was immediately drawn to it. It was more of a premium contemporary look that I'm naturally drawn to in my everyday clothes and fell in love with it. And it was there. I kind of did what I did at the Golf Channel is I went after that job. So there wasn't really a job to be held. I went to Germany and I met with the owners of Golfino about establishing this business in the United States. I actually think they looked up, saw how much I spent at the Old Course Hotel, and that's probably why they trusted me. And my husband certainly knows that it was cheaper for me to work for the company than to keep going back and spending thousands in St. Andrews. But I ended up leading that team for 7 years here in America and growing that business. And it was through that that I really became sensitive to the ladies' apparel industry, particularly in golf. Here in America, I paid very good attention as to the kinds of pieces and styles and fits and silhouettes that sold well in America.
Mm-hmm.
And also became acquainted with the fact that there were a lot of women similar to myself who in their everyday life might shop at Bloomingdale's, Saks, Neiman's, Intermix, which is a big store here in the US.
Yeah.
And want to kind of carry that same style with them in the sport that they love and that they do often. Golf isn't something that you do for a half hour. So when you put your golf clothes on, you're in them most of the day, if not all day. So women don't all of a sudden jettison their entire style just because they play a sport. And I think that I found that there were a lot of those kind of women, women who definitely were attracted to this look. Golfino definitely was a very, very European look and cut. And when we began Lola, we kept with that same sort of sensitivity, although we have highly Americanized the overall look of it. So going back, and I'm sorry to regress, but when COVID hit this past spring of 2020, Golfino hit on some hard times because they had so many freestanding stores. So they had over 30 freestanding stores that all of a sudden had to be closed down, and
right.
They ended up selling the brand. And when they sold the brand, it affected all of us. And it certainly affected us in America. We had a lot of customers, both in America and in Canada. We had a distributor in Canada who were very upset that they weren't going to get product. Their members were upset that there would be no more Golfino. I had been so close to Golfino that everybody called me.
Right.
I felt like I was getting phone calls like crazy from the country clubs, from the members. What's going on with Golfino? Can we get it? What's going to happen if it goes away, et cetera, et cetera. And after a couple weeks of that and sitting over some dinners with my husband, it kind of dawned on me that, you know what, if you were ever going to create a ladies premium golf brand, now is the time, because there was all of a sudden a hole in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And that hole is what I created, by the way.
Right, right.
Being able to get Golfino into all of these clubs and have the support that we did. Now, all of a sudden, there was a need for it, for something similar. And not only that, but during COVID, of course, certainly in America, more people were playing golf. Our country club is packed. More people were joining clubs. More women were playing. I think it's something like 450,000 women took up the game of golf in 2020. That's mm-hmm. ridiculous. It's amazing. Golf was marked safe. Country clubs were marked safe, where I couldn't go shopping in Beverly Hills, but I could go to my country club and buy clothes. So all of a sudden, country clubs had this protection on them that was very unusual. It never had really been that way. And so we had a market to go out to. I was fortunate that I still had the sales team that I had. I had customers who would talk to me and who trusted me. And I had connections in Europe for a design team and production team. So I had a lot of pieces to the puzzle that I had unknowingly been working on for 7 years, not knowing exactly that it would translate into Lola Sport.
Right, right. you just provided, you know, so many great insights there for people that are listening that are considering entrepreneurship, or they have an idea, whether it's in the golf industry or outside of it. You had a lot of these pieces already in place from your previous experience, and also the opportunity that you saw, and you knew the market. We talk about what's the market size and how do you access that market. One thing I know, where I'm waving my hands in the air here, and this is an audio podcast, so people can't see this, but and I'll put it in the show notes. And quite often we talk about this business model canvas, and it's got about 9 different areas between who are your customers, who are your channel partners, your supply chain, what is the value that you're adding. And it sounds like to me, you had most of those pieces for the roadmap of the business model for Lola Sport in place already from what you transported over with the opportunity with Golfino, which a lot of people out there in entrepreneurship, you have an idea, you get excited about this, you just want to get it in market. You need to get these other pieces in place first. So in a way, you kind of answered some of the other questions I was going to ask you. Was like, well, how did you put the team together? How did you start from zero on all this? And it sounds like you already had those connections and were able to bring that over from people then that didn't have the opportunity with Golfino, then unfortunately going away with their bricks and mortar stores disappearing. So that's a great transition into the next thing I want to ask you. And that is one of the other boxes in this business model canvas, and that is partnerships. And one of the interesting partnerships that I've been waiting to ask you about has to do with a race car. And I believe that just happened a month or so ago. So tell us about that and why you did that and what the value of that is. So tell us that story.
So in talking about entrepreneurship, the absolute most difficult thing that I had to do in creating Lola Sport was to get investors. That was one thing I had never done before. Through all of my other jobs where I maintained and developed really great contacts, I had never started something on my own. And I'm not great at asking for money. I don't know many people who are, to be honest. But my business plan was pretty solid. I knew my customer. I knew the product I was planning to make. I sort of knew, had a good guess of what I would sell in terms of dollar-wise. But now I had to go get investors. Mm-hmm. So I was able to use this wonderful game of golf. We meet so many lovely people to start my investor search. I did end up getting 5 investors, all of which I know through golf, but all have very different walks of life in their own. They all are part of very different businesses, live in different parts of the country. But each one, someone has been a mentor toward me in some way or another in the past few years. Well, it just so happens, and unbeknownst to me, that one of my investors, which is a couple, actually, who lives very near where I live in Southern California, that they were largely into race cars. And I didn't really know this other than very slight in passing until we really got into it. And they are members of this really cool club called the Thermal Club that's outside of Palm Desert. It's kind of like a country club if you erase the golf course and put in racetracks.
Right, right.
So you go there, you have a house, you own cars, you race go-karts, whatever. Anyway, they're very big into this. He owns cars there. I knew he had owned some cars and that he raced them on his own. Well, in his bucket list of things that he wanted to do in his life, he really wanted to be involved in the Indy 500. He had been equated with a gentleman who was an Indy driver through the Thermal Club, and in their talks, learned that this driver would definitely like to get back out there. He's an English guy named Stefan Wilson, and through his talks with my investor, which is Cusick Motorsports, by the way, in their talks together, they determined that this was going to be the year that Cusick was going to sponsor Stefan Wilson to race in the Indy 500. Now, how wonderful is this investor of mine that absolutely has zero ego in his own right and in his own business? He wanted to give the sponsorship and the promotional abilities to me, to Lola Sport, because he knew that it would benefit the brand. So how lucky am I to have gotten my name, Lola Sport, all over a race car, all over the fire suit of the driver and the pit crew. And I got to tell you about 50 other things. When I went to Indianapolis, it was amazing, the branding opportunities that they give you there. But you know what? I've also found a new love of this new sport of mine.
Right.
You know, I never thought that I would be into auto racing. And all of a sudden, I'm consumed with it. It is similar to golf in that people are voracious for it. They're passionate about it. They're willing to spend money to see it, to do it. They love the drivers, similar to how we have a love for our tour players. I mean, look at the love for Phil Mickelson winning the PGA. It's very similar to that. So there are actually some ways that the two sports kind of hold hands. But certainly there had never been a ladies, primarily golf sporting apparel company on an IndyCar before. And it was surreal. It was mind-blowing to see the amount of people there, the support, the press. It was maybe the coolest thing I've ever done and been a part of. And guess what? We announced we're doing it again next year. So
amazing.
We'll be back for 2022. And it's also, and it's going to influence our design a bit. Being around that additional sport, it's fun, it's fast, it's interesting, it's cool. And we're going to make some clothes to reflect that. Or even though you can wear them to play golf if you want to too, but you can certainly be sporting them while you're rooting for your favorite race team.
Love it. Love it. You're now race inspired for your design aesthetic
Totally. Here,
the way you're going with this. So it's been a couple of weeks since the race. Do you have any analytics so far, just as far as website traffic or even sales? So what type of a bump have you got from having this amazing earned media opportunity that your investor partner put on the plate for you there?
Yeah, you know, Colin, I just did the analysis of this yesterday, actually, and it really was amazing. Now, keep in mind, I'm also a very new brand, so the uptick is a lot. But just over the past 3 weeks, which is when we announced our partnership and then through the race, just in those 3 weeks, the Google search for Lola Sport was up 864%.
Wow.
My online traffic was up 500%. I gained 68% more social media followers. It's been very interesting and really heartwarming, actually, to see the way that we have been embraced in this other sport.
Love it. Love it. Well, you've done a couple of things here. Well, you've done lots of things, but I want to touch on two of them that just makes me smile to hear that you've done this. And one of them is on the investor side, to get back to that, when you brought investors on, because people watch Shark Tank or shows like this. That's not how entrepreneurship and even investment works. And people think, oh, just take the money. They offer the money, take the money. Don't just take the money. You need to build relationships. And you've done that over time. And it sounds like the people you have now as your investors are so like-minded and aligned with what you're doing. And it sounds like you're friends with them. I know the stats that if you bring on investors for your business, they will be with you longer than the average romantic marriage lasts in North America. And that is a fact, because that's usually a 7 to 10 year relationship for investors minimum with a business. And most marriages, unfortunately, don't last as long. So you've done the right thing there. You've brought people in that add that extra value, just even having that opportunity to open you up to the Indy 500. If you just had an investor that you went after the money and they're just grinding you for where's my return and nagging you about the details of the business, they did something which I need to touch on here for people considering entrepreneurship. They invested in you. Yes, Lola Sport and the business plan, they love that, but they invested in you and they trusted you. And that's the difference, is that you and the team that are then able to bring that racehorse into the winner's circle or have a better chance of doing that, which is fantastic. So I love the fact you've brought in people as far as investors, probably advisors also, that are aligned with what you do, which is fantastic. And the other one I wanted to quickly mention here is the fact that you didn't try to compete head on with all the other women's golf apparel brands that are out there. Some of the big ones, some of the other ones that are a little bit smaller. And that's going to make such a difference for you. I talk quite a bit about Blue Ocean Strategy and that business methodology. And one thing they talk about is bring in elements from other industries that work and that resonate and bring those in and kind of mix that up into your recipe and take the best aspects of golf and fashion and sport in this case and bring that together. And the fact you are now reaching out to this larger audience of non-golfers that you are going to attract, then you may have lots of women now wearing your apparel that may never put a club in their hand, which is a massive of business opportunity. I'm sure that's not lost on you now that you've seen the feedback through the Indy 500 experience.
No, and that's pretty exciting to think about that. I didn't put the word golf in the name of the company for a reason, because I did see that it was a bit limiting with Golfino, because those clothes you could wear anywhere, and Lola Sport you can wear anywhere. And to be honest, aside from swimming, you can do every sport in Lola Sport clothes. I can do yoga in it. Mm-hmm. And it's because our fabrics are so fantastic and stretchy and lovely. Premium fabrics that not only can you move so well, but you also look really put together while doing it. So that was definitely something that we wanted to keep in the line. And now that it's being recognized across sports and hopefully into everyday leisure activities, then the faster we'll grow. Also, going back a little bit to your point about competing with the other golf brands, as far as I'm concerned, there is room for everybody. When I walk into Saks Fifth Avenue, not everybody is huddled around one rack of clothes. You see everybody all scattered. People have different tastes. They have different looks that they want to convey. They have different bodies. They have different budgets. Everybody's different. And so I think that I kind of filled this need for this premium contemporary look that I was going for. But it doesn't mean that the other golf companies aren't filling other needs for women. And I think that's great. I think there is definitely room for all of us.
I love that approach that you have there. It's not a zero-sum game. You're not trying to get all the toys in the women's golf apparel sandbox there. There is definitely room. And also the exciting thing, and we saw that with Women's Golf Day, was the sixth year, and I'm good friends with Elisa Gaudet, and seeing how the trajectory of that has gone over the last couple of years. And you touched on at the top of the show, just the numbers. What did you say? Something like 450,000 new women golfers in COVID?
That is the report I heard.
It's the first time I've heard that.
450,000 new golfers who are women started the game in 2020.
Amazing. So I'm sure this is not lost on you, Lisa, that this is a growth segment and there's only going to be more and more women that are going to be playing the game as their financial status increases over the decades. Well, even as it is right now, as compared to even it was 20, 30 years ago, let's say back with both of our moms, how that trajectory has gone in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So as far as the business plan, you're just going to see a trajectory of growth here, which has got to be super exciting. So not only is there enough of the pie for everybody within the women's golf apparel space, the pie's getting bigger, would you not say?
It is getting bigger, Colin. That's exciting. It's really exciting. And one of the things that I also find very important, because I was a junior golfer myself, is getting some more junior golfers in Lola Sport. I specifically created the size extra, extra small in our shirts for girls who were, you know, between the ages of 8 and 13 and getting into the game. I can remember when I was that age, there was nothing to wear. I mean, I got shorts from the Gap and a collared t-shirt from somewhere, but I want to be able to support girls that are in that age range growing up in the game. I do have a very small right now, but small but growing junior ambassador program, where I have two girls who are, one's in seventh grade, one's in eighth grade. I know them through golf. One is, her name is Bailey Bayo. She's actually Scott Bayo's daughter from Happy Days, if you remember him.
I do.
Anyway, she is, yeah. So Bailey is heading into eighth grade. She shoots in the mid 70s regularly.
Wow.
And then my second junior ambassador, her name is Eva Lai. She's Mark Lai's daughter, who was also on the Golf Channel with me. Eva Lai is heading into ninth grade, but she shoots in the low 70s, bless her, and is really involved as well in her school and church. So it's great to meet these girls, and I'm looking for more.
Wow. I have so many questions that I can ask you here. We can go on for hours here, but I've got one more I'm going to ask you here, because I do want to hold off for a couple other questions, because we're going to jump on a video interview call for our Mod Golf YouTube channel. So we're going to mix it up and ask some different questions there, because hopefully our listeners here will become viewers over there. So I want one more question here for you, and that's to get back to your launch. And with COVID, one of the difficult things, one of the really scary things for entrepreneurs is, when do I launch? I want it to be perfect. This idea of a minimum viable product, even though you already brought over so many good things already from Golfino, that for you to transition was a little easier, let's say, than other businesses, especially in the apparel and the goods and the products sector. But what gave you the courage during a pandemic to then say, you know what? We're going for it. We're going to do this, rather than say, no, why don't we hold off a little while longer? Why don't we wait till the pandemic's over? What gave you the courage to say, you know what, we're going to press play and we're just going to go for this and we're going to launch. We're not going to wait.
Yeah. You know what, Colin? To be honest, it was the pandemic that made me press play. I did have a very short window to launch. And I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs feel that way, that you've got a product and you've got a window of time. I knew that because Golfino wasn't going to be returning to the shelves in the US, that I had shelf space that I didn't want to give up. It was either going to be filled with something that I created or something else.
Right.
My goal was to capitalize on that while I could. It was difficult though, because of the pandemic, I couldn't make samples. We couldn't see anybody face to face to sell anything. To be honest, I had to contact my top clubs, my top buyers that bought Golfino from me, and basically say, hey, how much do you trust me? Let me show you some sketches. And what do you think? Will you buy it? And I contacted 80 of my top clubs, and 61 bought it sight unseen. And that was how I started. So bless them for giving me a chance. And I thank them every day.
Love it. Love it. And we talk about in entrepreneurship, when you're creating, whether it's a prototype, whether it's an app or whether it's software, whether it's actual hardware or a product, talk about your minimum viable product and then getting customer validation. And you did both those things by taking sketches around and getting out there and hustling and asking a lot of questions. It's like, would you buy this before you then did? And I've seen this and it breaks my heart. People that then go and create then $500,000 worth of inventory of what they consider to be beautiful stuff, and then they have no one to buy it, and they got no supply chains and no channels already. So you did the right thing, and that is to get the validation first and probably get some purchase orders in place, and then taking that and then fill those orders and actually then spend the money because you already had those in place. And it sounds so obvious, but so many entrepreneurs don't. And I'll be honest, back when I started this entrepreneurial journey, my transition from being an architect to our first entrepreneurial endeavor about 8 years ago, I got it backwards. We got it backwards, the same type of thing. And you didn't. So congratulations on that, which
thanks,
is great,
Colin.
But it seems so obvious in hindsight. But for everybody out there considering entrepreneurship, put it out there. I'm sure you know this also. You fall in love with what you're doing. You're so passionate about it that it's a bit ego-driven too, that you don't want anybody, if you look at it as like a baby, you don't want anybody to tell you your baby's ugly. Right. And so if you keep it close to your chest, no one will tell you that. But you've got to put it out there. And you know what? If people tell you your baby's a little bit ugly, yeah. make a better looking baby. It is, I don't know if that's the best analogy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I got kind of lucky. They didn't tell me my baby was ugly, but some of them told me, I'm so scared of COVID. I don't think I'm going to hold your baby.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I did get very lucky with the people who did come on board early with us, with Lola Sport. And now they get rewarded for it all the time.
Nice, nice. So I'm assuming that with Lola Sport that you are an online store right now. You're getting away from the bricks and mortar and obviously getting into, with your channel partners, getting into country clubs and pro shops around the US and I don't know up in Canada here yet. So with that, why don't you tell our listeners where they can learn more about Lola Sport?
So yes, that's true. We are online as of April 1st. It's lolasport.com. We have right now the spring summer availability styles online right now. We will be transitioning into the new fall styles, the pre-fall, starting on July 1st. I do give the country clubs a few weeks prior to me putting it online just to give them a little time to sell it into their membership first. So they get first right of refusal, so to speak, and then it goes online for purchase there. So with that, we're hoping to garner more interest in places in the country where we're not carried in a pro shop. In terms of Canada, we will in the next 12 months be looking for a distributor up there because there's so many great clubs up in the Canadian area. We'll be there soon. We're growing. We're mighty.
There you go.
Small but mighty.
There you go. I love the story. I love your entrepreneurial journey so far. And I have a feeling you've just written the first couple of chapters. There's a lot more to be put into the book as you go. So as I always do,
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, I think I know so. Getting to know you a little bit here. You've got it what it takes. They got the right entrepreneurial DNA here between the curiosity and the tenacity and all those other good ingredients that you need to be a successful entrepreneur. You got it going on there. I think you're going to do okay there.
Thanks, Colin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So as I always do, I will include all the links for Lola Sport in the show notes. We'll also include some pictures. I've got a couple of pictures already of that beautiful car of yours, that Indy car with the driver and you beside there, smiling very proudly. So we'll definitely have that in the show notes also. And we'll also include all your social media links on there for people to take a look at all the good things that you're doing. So Lisa O'Hurley, entrepreneur, CEO and founder of Lola Sport. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Mod Golf Podcast.
Thank you, Colin. I really appreciated the time.
So that's a wrap for this episode of the Mod Golf Podcast. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lisa O'Hurley, the founder of Lola Sport. If you enjoyed this conversation about entrepreneurship in the golf industry, you can find more compelling episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen in. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on our homepage to hear about upcoming episodes and to enter our latest golf product giveaway. I'm your host, Colin Weston. Thanks very much for joining me. Bye for now.